нас кличе у мандри дорога. Нам грає чарівна струна. Тобою піду, я буду вітром летіти, буду сонцем горіти для тебе. Шалені мрії мої летять за обрій землі і будять в серці твоїм гарячі хвилі. Нас кличе у мандри дорога, грає чарівна струна. Весна без страху і дна летить над світом, вона співає в небі. Шалені мрії мої летять за обрій землі і будять в серці твоїм гарячі хвилі. Нас кличе у мандри дорога, грає чарівна струна. Для тебе луна.
Добрий ранок, добрий вечір. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопередачу «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння по мережі PCJ Radio, яка подається вам, як звичайно, з Британської Колумбії в Канаді. Говорить Павліна Макворі, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Hello there and welcome to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, coming to you from Vancouver Island on the west coast of Canada, courtesy PCJ Radio. I'm your host, Paulette Demchik-McQuarrie, Pokrinska Pavlina. Thank you so much for joining me, and I am glad to have you with me. I'm glad to be back home. I had a wonderful time in Ukraine, but it is good to be back home. We've got a great program lined up for you. We've got a couple of interviews. We've got a Canadian MP, Member of Parliament, and the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of National Defense, who was, incidentally, in Ukraine at the time that I was, in different cities. So I just missed him, along with the Prime Minister. But James Bazan spoke to us earlier this week and told us all about his visit there, as well as what Canada is doing to help Ukraine in its fight against Russian aggression. As well, we have an interview with the co-founder of the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter, which is the organization that sponsored my trip to Ukraine, and she'll be talking about a very interesting exhibit that is making its way across Canada. So if any international listeners are planning to be in Canada this summer, then definitely you'll want to check this out if you can. As well, we've got Ukrainian Jewish heritage, and Renata will be telling us all about one of the places that I had the very good fortune to visit on this recent trip to Ukraine. So all of that coming up, as well, our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music. And most of it today, on today's show, will be courtesy my colleague in Kyiv, Roman Shved, who does a program called Uromane Neni Yeharni Hosti, or something like that. And it means today Roman has very nice guests on his show. Loses in the translation, much better in Ukrainian. At any rate, he invited me on his show when I was there, and it airs Mondays at 6:10 p.m. till 7 Kyiv time, and definitely a show you want to catch if you speak Ukrainian. And a couple of times when we were meeting, when he was prepping for the show at the Cupidon Bar, a few steps from the radio station, he shared some of his music with me, so I'm going to share it with you. We started out the show with Mandre and a song called Droha, which means road or journey. And coming up next is Ot Vinta with a song called Upoli Krai Sela, which means more or less in the land of the village.
Уполі край село, нечисто сила, здобула собі містечко і кращому побудувала. На горі тільки дівчинкам на перевагу, церковам горілки пива і вина приготувала. І тепер не просихають собі чоловіки, кожен день їм коло шматі та роздратовані жінки. В кожній хаті чути сварку, в кожній хаті чути гвалт. Не треба, не треба, ой, не треба, мила, я не треба. Гайдота, я свиня, присягає, спить не буду ні горілки, ні вина. Я благаю, обіцяю, не послухайте мене. На дрима, дрима, ой, на дрима, мило, я не треба. Ой, мило, я не треба. Ой, не треба. Ой, мило, я не треба. Зупинись, моя кохана, зупинись, хоча б на мить. Відсихають руки, ну і голова моя болить. Я ж не витримаю цього, не послухайте мене. На дрима, чоловікам усе, що треба, пробачають. І навіть їсти їм дають, і навіть у ліжка і кладуть до ран, холодні їм компреси прикладають. А на другий день на вечір знову тягне по першому. Неможливо зрозуміти, як, від чого і чому. Кожній хаті чути сварку, кожній хаті чути гвалт. Не треба, не треба, ой, не треба, мила, я не треба.
Золотий ювілей української культури в Паркланд-околиці. Канадський національний український фестиваль «Вдофін Манітоба» відбудеться від 31 липня по 2 серпня. Святкуйте 50 неймовірних років української культури з музикою і танцями гуртів з усієї Канади та України. Якщо ви ніколи не були в фестивалі або не були тут роками, прошу розгляньте це запрошення. За квитками контактуйтеся по телефону 1-877-474-2683 або по інтернету cnuf.ca. Ласкаво просимо.
James Bazan is Member of Parliament for Selkirk Interlake in Manitoba and Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of National Defence, Jason Kenney. Mr. Bazan kindly joins us now to tell us about his recent visit to Ukraine with Prime Minister Stephen Harper and Canada's latest round of military aid to help Ukraine defend itself against Russian aggression. Mr. Bazan, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Paulette.
I just missed you in Ukraine. I think I was traveling to or from Lviv at the time. But I wanted to let you know that earlier in Kyiv, I had spoken with some volunteers, one just back from the front. And this was a medic who was so thankful for what Canada provided. She pointed to her boots and her jacket, that she was wearing proper gear, and also the training. She was originally a trained physiotherapist, but she learned from Canada how to patch up wounded soldiers. So she and her other fellow volunteers are very, very thankful to Canada.
And I hear the same thing whenever I'm traveling in Ukraine, and so does Prime Minister Harper. I can tell you that the troops are just so grateful for all the equipment that Canada has provided, as well as, you know, the generous donations that have come in from Canadians right across this country. The diaspora has been charitable in collecting money and buying the equipment that is needed at the front lines to deal with the tragedy and the traumatic accidents and injuries that are occurring because of Russia's aggression in Donbass.
Now, Canada is going beyond the military now, and I understand it's doing something with the police.
Right. As I learned when I was in Ukraine a few weeks ago, speaking at the Kyiv Security Forum, the government of Ukraine announced that they were going to fire their entire police force, their civilian police force. And the reason for doing that is that if you're going to address the issue of corruption and gain the respect and the confidence of the people of Ukraine, then the government realized that you have to take out one of the most corrupt segments of their government, which was the police force. All too often, you know, people would be walking down the street, driving through an intersection, or even taking their kids to school, only to be pulled over by some of the civilian police and essentially be extorted for money. And this type of corruption has to come to an end. So the government of Ukraine is firing their entire police force. They will allow those that are under 35 to reapply and look at their record, and hopefully the sad generation that wouldn't have the same level of corruption, say, some of the older police officers. But that's going to be a huge need for more training. And so the government of Canada is providing $5 million and up to 10 civilian police officers to train at the police academies in Kyiv and Lviv and Dnipropetrovsk and Kharkiv and Odessa. And so at those five locations, we'll be in the police academies, making sure that not only are we teaching them how to be good police officers, but also how they also deal with the community at large, and essentially make sure that they have a zero tolerance for corruption.
So is Canada involved at all in the administrative process? You said they're firing their whole force. How does that work?
Well, I guess the layoff notices are going to be going out in a matter of a couple of weeks. And essentially that this is something that the Poroshenko administration feels is quite important, and one that we support, and as well as other countries support, because we want them to become more closer aligned to their NATO neighbors and European Union and allies. And essentially, if they're going to fulfill their aspirations of closer Euro-Atlantic ties, they have to conform to the same rules of governance and democracy building as the rest of the nations. And that includes their military and police force. And so that's why we're helping with training their police. That's why we're sending 200 Canadian Armed Forces members to train their troops, whether it be, as you already mentioned, medics and dealing with traumatic injuries because of blasts. We're going to be training them how to deal with unexploded ordnances and improvised explosive devices that the terrorists in Donetsk and Luhansk are using against them. That's why we're going to be doing unit and tactical training at the individual level so that they can defend themselves effectively, safely, and know how to take the fight in the best possible way to the Russian aggressors. And finally, we are providing in Kyiv itself a number of our military police to help them train their military police officers and weed out corruption within the military.
corruption is a really big issue, and it's really goes hand in hand, I guess, with what they're facing right now as far as an outside threat. That's the inside threat, and it's interesting that Canada is very cognizant of this. You don't hear a lot of it on the media. You see a lot of it with, you know, Russian trolls making comments, of course. But I guess it's a kind of a, it's not something to talk about, maybe, the whole issue of corruption, but it's great to hear that the Canadian government is aware of it and is dealing with it on at such a grassroots level.
And I can tell you, Paulette, that you know, it is a priority for our government, that we're taking a whole government approach in helping Ukraine realize its aspirations and defend itself. Security is first and foremost in dealing with Putin's war in eastern Ukraine. But at the same time, the people of Ukraine, you know, and I heard this over and over again, wherever I'm traveling, and I've gone to Russian-speaking areas of Ukraine like Odessa and Kharkiv, and during the elections, both presidential and parliamentary elections, people are telling me what we take for granted here in Canada. They want a future. They want their security. They want to know that they have a good job and that there's a future for their kids and their grandkids. And they expect good governance. That's something that Ukraine has never truly experienced because of the infiltration of Soviet-style tactics, as well as the what we call the fifth column, the double agent from Russia that has operated from within. So, you know, Poroshenko and Yatsenyuk have adopted a lustration policy of trying to rout out those double agents, as well as those who are taking advantage of their position within government and using the public treasury for their own personal needs. And really, that public treasury is there to support the people of Ukraine, and the government needs to have the ability to do that. Yanukovych was a case in point where he emptied the treasury. He stole 2/3 of the gold reserve, and all of that is sitting in his personal bank accounts in Rostov-on-Don and other places in the world.
Is there any way to recover that stolen wealth?
Well, there's a lot of work that's been taking place, and I know that through Interpol and other police and agencies, charges have been brought forward. I would call upon the Russian government to allow Yanukovych to be extradited to Kiev and arrested and stand trial, not just for his corruption, but also his war against his own people. And, you know, really, it was a human rights criminal activity that he pulled off on the Maidan when he had his own Berkut open fire on innocent protesters. And of course, then we have, you know, the Heavenly Hundred that we all remember to this day and are still memorialized on the Maidan.
Yes, I get chills every time I go there and see all those candles and photos and flowers. It's something, as you said, we take for granted here in Canada, and many people don't realize the importance of maintaining this kind of democracy. Yes, it's halfway around the world, but if we allow that to erode, it's going to eventually come to our shore, to our country. And in fact, we're seeing that happening with ISIS, which is, you know, another story altogether. There's an election coming up, and it, you know, I can't get partisan, but I do want to ask a question that perhaps nobody is asking, and that is, why is this particular government, it's the first one, I've been a Ukrainian community activist for decades, and I have never seen the Canadian government ever go to these lengths before. I mean, the smallest things that the Ukrainian community asked for that were, you know, reasonable, for example, you know, recognition of the internment, were ignored by previous governments, and, you know, including conservative, I have to say, although, you know, Mr. Mulroney was somewhat better than Mr. Chrétien, but why now? What is it? Why?
Well, myself being of Ukrainian heritage, it's something that I and others within caucus are very passionate about, is the issues that are important to the Ukrainian diaspora. But I can tell you that our Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, along with Minister Jason Kenney and others, really want to make sure that the evils that have been perpetrated against the people around the world by communist regimes are never forgotten. And so that's why Holodomor recognition and recognizing it as a genocide, as was done through my private member's bill in 2008, plays to that, having the national memorial to the victims of communism, which is going to be here in Ottawa near Parliament Hill, is again a testament to our belief that we can never allow communism to get the same grip on power as they have and allow them to commit the mass atrocities that they traditionally have done. And what's happening right now in Ukraine demonstrates to us more than anything President Putin cannot be trusted, that the Russian Federation is not acting in good faith and is no longer a trusted neighbor or ally in trying to reduce conflict in the world. And Ukraine represents the thin edge of the wedge of what Russia is possible of. And so Prime Minister Harper stood out boldly and strongly denouncing President Putin, even to his face, when he told him that he has to get out of Ukraine, and that we would never recognize any territory of Ukraine becoming a part of Russia, whether it takes 5 months or 50 years. We would never, ever recognize Russia's occupation of Ukrainian territory. So we will continue to stand strong against Russia. And we'll continue to work with our NATO allies to ensure that we have military presence in Eastern Europe. And we will work to support Ukraine in every way possible to ensure that they can stand up against President Putin and his war in the Donbass.
Well, thank you so much, James Bizon, for sharing your insight and this new information. And all the best to you, and hope to have you on the show again soon.
Well, anytime, Paulette. And as I said at the Kiev Security Forum, because I was asked a similar question about why Canada is doing this, and it's more than just, you know, Ukrainians have called, you know, 1.2 million Ukrainians have called Canada home and helped build Canada, especially Western Canada, like my Bubba and Guido. But it is that we're not just family, we're not just friends. Canadians, regardless of their heritage, love Ukrainians, and we want to stand with them during their time of need.
Indeed. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
James Bizon, Member of Parliament for Selkirk Interlake in Manitoba, and Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of National Defense, Jason Kenney, on his recent trip to Ukraine. You're listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, coming to you on the PCJ Radio Network from Vancouver Island in beautiful British Columbia, Canada. And now, Ukrainian Jewish Heritage, hosted by Renata Hananets in cooperation with the Jewish Heritage Museum in Lviv, Ukraine. This special Nash Holos feature is brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative based in Toronto, Ontario.
This is Renata Hananets at the Faina Petrikova Scientific Center for Judaica and Jewish Art in Lviv, Ukraine. The creation of the Tkuma Ukrainian Institute for Holocaust Studies in Dnipropetrovsk dates back to 1999. At the time, it was called the Tkuma Scholarly Educational Center, and it was the first national center for studying and teaching the history of Ukraine's Jews and the Holocaust. The institute's name is derived from a religious moshav, a communal settlement in southern Israel. Tkuma was established as a kibbutz in early October 1946. The first residents were immigrants from Eastern Europe who survived the Holocaust. Its name reflects the resurrection of Israel. The Hebrew word Tkuma, in fact, means resurrection. An important achievement of Tkuma is the creation of the Museum Jewish Memory and Holocaust in Ukraine. The opening ceremony of the museum was the 16th of October 2012 in Dnipropetrovsk. On this date, the Tkuma Center was renamed the Tkuma Ukrainian Institute for Holocaust Studies. The mission of the institute is forming and strengthening the Jewish national identity, as well as improving Ukrainian-Jewish relations in Dnipropetrovsk and throughout Ukraine. Today, Tkuma is widely known in Ukraine and abroad for its work devoted to Jewish history in Ukraine, the Holocaust, and the problems of international relations. Since its inception, it has published many scientific monographs and textbooks and conducted scientific conferences and educational seminars. Among the scientific publications prepared by Tkuma Institute are issues of a scholarly journal titled Holocaust Studies, as well as research on the regional aspects of the Holocaust in the various regions of Ukraine, such as Odessa, Bukovina, and elsewhere. There are also collections of memoirs. Memory Revival is the title of a collective monograph on the history of the Holocaust in Ukraine. As a research center for Holocaust studies, KUMA conducts international academic conferences and provides important research projects on an ongoing basis. Currently, the most important KUMA research topic is the phenomenon of writers among the nations who saved Jews from Nazi genocide, risking their own lives and the lives of their families. From June 22nd till 24th of this year, Tukuma hosted a large international scientific conference called Writers Among the Nations and Other Rescuers During the Holocaust, Ukraine's example in the comparative context. Scholars and public figures from around the world were invited to the conference. Organizers included the Ukrainian Catholic University in Lviv, the Ministry of Education and Science of Ukraine, the Museum of the History of Polish Jews in Warsaw, and other institutions and organizations. Also some Canadians. The Petro Yatsik Program for the Study of Modern Ukrainian History and Society, run by Canadian Institute of Ukrainian Studies at the University of Alberta and the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter. More information about this conference and other TKUMA initiatives can be found at their website www.tkuma.dp.ua. I invite you to visit the TKUMA Ukrainian Institute for Holocaust Studies. It is located at 15B Barikadna Street in Dnipropetrovsk. This is Renata Ganinets at the Faina Petryakova Scientific Center for Judaica and Jewish Art in Lviv, Ukraine. Until next time, shalom.
Thank you, Renata. Щиро дякую. Join us again next week for another episode of Ukrainian Jewish Heritage here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative. To find out more, visit them at ukrainianjewishencounter.org and follow them on Facebook and Twitter. For transcripts and audio files of this and earlier broadcasts of Ukrainian Jewish Heritage, please visit the Nash Holos website, www.nashholos.com.
name is Sholem Aleichem. Is this he taken? You may ask of the traveler in third class. Ich bin ein Reisender, dritte Klasse. Mein Name ist Hello, how are you? Sanja, der fragt mit mir, dem Reisenden dritte Klasse. The things I've seen and in between 11 months of the year on the road with you, my dear. Through fields of grain and snow and rain, 11 months of the year in the train across Ukraine, in the train across Ukraine, in the train across Ukraine.
New York klezmer group called Golem with a song that they composed themselves and performed, in this case at Echo Park in California back in 2009, called A Train Across Ukraine. And I chose that song because that happens to be exactly how I got to Dnipropetrovsk, which is where Takuma Institute is located, and I had the great fortune to visit there. It is the largest Jewish museum in the world. The Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative, based in Toronto, is also pretty busy closer to home. Now, what is the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter, you may ask? Well, the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter, known as UJE, is a privately organized multinational initiative launched in 2008 as a collaborative project to promote deeper mutual comprehension and solidarity between Ukrainians of Jewish, Christian, and other heritages. It's based in Toronto and engages scholars, civic leaders, artists, governments, and the broader public throughout Ukraine, Israel, and the diasporas. Recently, UJE organized a conference in Ukraine on propaganda and genocide, which I was able to attend thanks to the organization's generosity. UJE organizes many conferences that facilitate broader dialogue and understanding, as well as public education projects. One such project is an exhibition entitled A Journey Through the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter, From Antiquity to 1914. It was created by UJE and co-funded by Citizenship and Immigration Canada. The Multimedia Traveling Community Exhibition premiered in Toronto at the Schwartz-Reisman Center in Vaughan in May and is currently on display at the Osoradok Ukrainian Cultural and Educational Center in Winnipeg, where it opened on Monday, June 15th. On the line with us now to tell us more about this innovative exhibit is Alti Rodal, who is co-director of the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative. Thanks so much for joining us, Alti.
You're very welcome. Okay, so I'm wearing another hat. I'm also the curator of this exhibition.
Oh, are you? Oh, wow. You've got a lot on your plate then, that's for sure. Now, this exhibit has an intriguing title, A Journey Through the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter from Antiquity to 1914. That covers quite a long period of history, and it's pretty specific to Ukrainians and Jews, but I imagine it'll be of interest for a wider Canadian public as well.
Yes. We certainly think so. It is a specific example of two peoples who lived side by side for many, many centuries and interacted in a variety of ways, both in neighborly, friendly interaction over long stretches of time and occasional intermittent times of crisis and violence. And the result of this is that each of these two peoples have developed separate narratives and perspectives on events that they have in common. And the challenge for historians is to include different perspectives and obtain as truthful an interpretation of the events of the past as is possible based on evidence that is available and the accounts that have been put together by authoritative historians of whatever background.
That's really a challenge, because when you've got separate narratives like that, you've got different perspectives. And then when they go out to the public as two separate and often conflicting narratives, that can be very confusing.
And also it gives rise to stereotypes. When you take it from a narrative to the popular level, there is a tendency to generalize. And at the popular level, the appreciation of what happened becomes stereotyped. And the challenge that we are taking upon ourselves is to bring to light the facts as best as we can based on the evidence that has been collected by authoritative historians, and to bring into play the different perspectives so that these stereotypes can be addressed, treated, that a light can be shed on them, so that whatever grains of truth are in the stereotypes come to light, but the broader context is also brought to bear on the story.
Well, I think, you know, what you're doing, you know, what you've said is a real eye-opener, because a lot of these separate narratives often focus on those short intermittent periods of violence, as you pointed out, or as the overall picture, that context is missing because people forget. Yes, there were, you know, periods, there were wars and there were pogroms and there were other periods in time where people, Ukrainians and Jews came, and, you know, Jews and other people came into conflict. But those were the exception rather than the rule. But the narratives, and particularly the ones that come at you, because maybe people tend to latch onto the negative more and resonate with that. And so you've got this conflict. So I think it's quite remarkable what you're doing in presenting something like this. You are presenting the context that's missing in these narratives.
Yeah, there's no doubt that some of the events were traumatic and therefore got themselves deeply embedded in the memories of the Jewish people or of the Ukrainian people. And this is, and as you say, it involves other peoples as well, because both Jews and Ukrainians were stateless peoples living under a successive regimes of some oppressive, some less so, but experiencing an imposed experience and reacting to it. So the tendency naturally would be to not remember the long stretches of a normal existence, just as newspapers will latch on to a sensational story rather than to a common, normal daily story.
Well, as they say, no news is good news, right? Vice versa, yes. I guess.
Yes. So it distorts the picture. Of course, when one jumps from one crisis to another, forgetting the long stretches in between. So the challenge is not to whitewash the difficult, painful interludes, shall we call them, but at the same time to bring to light the longer stretches of time of coexistence. And the way in which we have decided is the best way to do this is to focus on cultural interaction and ways in which Jewish culture flourished on Ukrainian lands. Both of these aspects would show that there were long periods of peaceful, normal existence. So in order for cross-cultural influences in folklore and language and cuisine and art and architecture, for this to happen, people do have to get along. And that shows those stretches of normal coexistence. Likewise, when there is an awareness of flourishing Hebrew or Yiddish printing presses, or the growth, the flourishing of the Hasidic movement on Ukrainian lands where, in fact, it originated, or when one looks at some of the well-established communities with the very impressive synagogues, stone synagogues, or wooden synagogues with wonderful decor in their interior. All this didn't happen in times of crisis, but in times of prosperity.
Exactly. So these examples that you've just cited are part of the exhibition?
Yes. Yes. We do it in a variety of ways. Mm-hmm. The exhibition itself consists of poster panels There are 36 of them plus some maps and a series of continuously playing videos. The panels consist of brief, interesting narratives, lots of images, and ways in which to visually convey a story. The videos include music, so there we impart the fact of cross-cultural influences in music, the fusion of music, which not necessarily comes from Ukrainian to Jewish or Jewish to Ukrainian. By the way, mostly it would have been Ukrainian to Jewish because Ukrainians were the majority culture and Jews were a minority. But there were other cultures there as well influencing both, whether it was Gypsies or Poles or Russians or Hungarians or Romanians.
Wow, music is, well, it's a universal language, so I'm sure that would be of great interest to anybody.
I should just add about music that in one of the videos in particular, we use images that were taken during an expedition in 1912-1914, led by S. Anski, who some may know as the author of the famous play, The Dybbuk. He led this ethnographic expedition to collect folklore and photographs and artifacts and so on to preserve memory of Jewish culture. And what he also collected, he had with him, in addition to a photographer, a few musicologists who collected folk songs and music and had these recorded on wax cylinders. And these wax cylinders are in Kiev at the Vernadsky Library. And we have these as background music to the images that were taken in 1912-14. So that in itself tells a very deep story.
Oh, it does. I'm so disappointed that I'm not in Winnipeg right now to be able to see that exhibition.
Well, maybe you can come to Edmonton.
Well, Edmonton's a little closer, but how about you come out to the West Coast?
We can try that too. We're thinking about it.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's in Winnipeg right now until the end
until
of June.
Until the 27th.
27th, okay.
June. And then it will travel back to Toronto, to downtown Toronto, because the initial showing was in North Toronto and to a different audience. And in downtown Toronto, it will be at St. Vladimir's Institute.
And then in Edmonton?
In Edmonton, we have to confirm, but likely it will be at St. John's Institute.
Okay, well, you'll keep us informed, hopefully, so we can let our listeners know, and as we have listeners in all those communities.
Yes, thanks. And you should know that then travels to Montreal,
oh,
where it will be in both French and English.
Oh,
excellent. At two venues. One is the Jewish Public Library, and the other is a building which is, in itself is a museum piece. It's a former synagogue in downtown Montreal, which is now owned by the Ukrainian-Canadian Federation.
Wow, doesn't that come full circle then?
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for letting us know about this, Ulti, and thank you so much for doing it. It's long overdue, I think, for not just for our two communities, but for the world. And I'm assuming this probably is just a foundation for further study and further mutual understanding and of our shared past so that we can build a happier shared future.
Yes, and the novel thing about the exhibit is that it brings together the stories of the two peoples in one exhibition, side by side, so that there are many parallels, commonalities, and ways in which we could build empathy between these two peoples.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Looking forward to having an opportunity to see this. Anybody who is in any of these communities, Winnipeg, right now, this is your opportunity to go and see this fascinating exhibit. Or if you're visiting Winnipeg this month, next month in Toronto, then Edmonton, then Montreal, and maybe with any luck out here on the West Coast. And really looking forward to that, Ulti. Thank you so much for sharing your information, and all the best with this traveling exhibit. You're listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, coming to you on the PCJ Radio Network from Vancouver Island in beautiful British Columbia, Canada. Now the latest news stories from Ukraine, courtesy Ukraine's first international English news channel, Ukraine Today.
Fighting continues in East Ukraine, with more than 40 Russian-backed militants continuing to shell Ukrainian troops. Militants over the weekend again attacked the town of Marinka and the surrounding areas using 120mm mortars and multiple rocket launch systems, weapons prohibited in the February Minsk ceasefire agreement.
Ukrainian army positions in Donbas came under attack 58 times on June 16th, including 16 attacks by mortars, among them 122mm calibers, outlawed by the Minsk peace declaration, and three attacks by 122mm howitzers. Weapons with calibers over 100mm were supposed to have been withdrawn by both sides, well out of the range of the front line weeks ago, according to the Minsk peace agreement. Ukrainian military spokesman said militants in Lugansk used rockets and heavy artillery to shell several villages. Fighting was also reported in the area of Artyomivsk near Donetsk.
Ukrainian pilot Nadia Savchenko has now spent 1 year illegally detained in Russia. The head of the Russian Presidential Human Rights Council, Mikhail Fedotov, said Savchenko is feeling basically well despite recently embarking on a hunger strike which lasted more than 80 days. Savchenko was jailed in Moscow last July after she was abducted and brought into Russia by militants fighting in East Ukraine. She is charged with complicity in the killing of two Russian journalists who died in the conflict in eastern Ukraine, as well as illegally crossing the border. The fighter pilot was appointed to Ukraine's delegation to the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe in January, a move which theoretically granted her immunity and should have led to her release.
Slovakia is helping dozens of Ukrainian troops injured during combat operations in eastern Ukraine by providing free room and board in the country's spas. Some 75 troops from various Ukrainian units, as well as wounded soldiers, will be treated there free of charge. More than a dozen availed themselves of the opportunity today, and in 2 weeks' time, another group will replace them. The program is geared for those soldiers who have received the most serious injuries.
Vice News correspondent Simon Ostrovsky has uncovered even more evidence of Russia's involvement in Ukraine. In a recent report, Vice News met with British citizen journalist and blogger Elliot Higgins, who has made a name for himself using photos freely available online to pinpoint the location of soldiers and terrorists all over the world. During the report, Ostrovsky also uses open-source information from Russian social media site VKontakte to track Bato Dambayev from Siberia, where he served in the Russian army unit on the Mongolian border, to Ukraine. Vice News came across multiple indications that Dambayev not only fought in the battle for Ukraine's Debaltseve in February, but is also still an active member of the Russian army.
Russia's 30th truck convoy, supposedly carrying humanitarian aid to the residents of war-torn Donbas, has crossed into Ukraine. Having crossed the Ukrainian border, the convoy of more than 100 trucks split into two columns, one headed to Luhansk and the other to Donetsk. Russia says the trucks will bring food, medicine, and other items to the residents of East Ukraine. But it is not known exactly what is in the vehicles because Russia does not allow inspections to be performed by Ukrainian border guards, members of the OSCE or the International Red Cross. Ukrainian security officials insist that the trucks are largely used to supply militant forces with weapons. A Ukrainian health center is offering an unusual treatment for soldiers wounded while fighting pro-Russian militants in the east, dolphin therapy. Sessions with the medical staff in the center of Khmelnik in central Ukraine includes time in the pool with four dolphins. They were brought to the center from the Crimean city of Sevastopol 3 years ago to treat children with disabilities. After the armed conflict between Ukrainian troops and pro-Russian militants began in the east of the country, the center's director came up with the idea of bringing wounded soldiers to Khmelnik for the treatment. The therapy involves swimming with dolphins in a pool in a belief that the ultrasonic waves emitted by the dolphins can help cure a range of health problems. As part of the psychological therapy, dolphins entertain soldiers by performing tricks, painting, and kissing. The rehabilitation lasts 10 days and is free for Ukrainian servicemen.
And with that, we've come to the end of this week's Ukraine News Roundup. For more breaking stories on Ukraine, follow Ukraine Today on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and their live blog at uatoday.tv. For the very best in Ukrainian programming, tune in to Nasholos Ukrainian Roots Radio in Vancouver every Saturday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time on AM 1320 CHMB and streaming at am1320.com. Live in Nanaimo, Wednesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific Time on CHLY 101.7 FM and online at chly.ca. Elsewhere in the world, here on the PCJ Radio Network on AM, FM, and shortwave radio. In between broadcasts, find us online at www.nasholos.com. Where you can get links to podcast feeds of all three editions of the show. As well, make sure to follow us on Twitter and our blog and like our Facebook page. На жаль, ми вже скінчили нашу програму. Вже час додому і сказати до побачення. Але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Хто гумору не має, той і радості не знає. And our proverb of the week translates as, he who has no sense of humor can never know joy. Well, that about wraps it up for another edition of Nasholos Ukrainian Roots Radio here on the PCJ Radio Network. To take us home, we've got the Canadian Rhythm Masters and the Great Plains Kolomeika. I'm Paulette Demchik-Macquarie, Pokrinske Pavlina, on behalf of all of us here at Nasholos and PCJ Radio. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, do побачення.